Hey guys, how's things? Oh, good. All right, well, I'm Scott Horton, and this is my radio show. It's called The Scott Horton Show, for pretty obvious reasons. It's mostly about me hating the government and mostly the empire, the foreign empire. Well, there's a domestic empire, too, but the foreign one isn't yet. That's basically the deal. Libertarian foreign policy. Goddamn show started before I was done reading this article. But what a great article. I hope I can get this guy who wrote it to come on my radio show and talk about it. It's at GQ.com. The Untold Story of the Texas Biker Gang Shootout. And this is not something I paid close attention to, but I should have. We did discuss on the show how there were initial reports came right out that said it was the cops that were doing all the killing, which is, you know, pretty obvious, right? They were there. There was a quote. Boy, I thought as soon as we rolled up, I thought, well, this doesn't look right. They're surrounded by cops. They're just driving into a turkey shoot. And 9 people dead, they said. There's a great quote from the guy in here. I'm spoiling it for you. These, you know, they're biker clubs. They're not biker, outlaw biker gangs like some movie. They're biker clubs. And maybe a little bit of outlaw in there, but. So many of these guys are veterans. And they quote the one guy saying, well, yeah, you know, I'm a vet. I know about small arms and I know about rifles. And what I heard was pop, pop, pop. But then after the first 3, after that, it was nothing but rifles. That is, the cops and their AR-15s standing on the perimeter and just waxing innocent people. Just firing into the crowd. You know, for fun, because they're murderers. Land of the free and home of the brave and take your hat off and cry at the ball game and all that. But wait, where are we living where the cops can massacre 80 people to death with machine guns and fire and bombs and call it a suicide in Waco, Texas, where 21 years later, it was last year, right, the thing? Or was it early this year? I forget now. 22 years later, they can just kill, you know, I mean, they call them all criminals, pretended that they're all, you know, not biker clubs, but biker gangs in the worst sense or whatever. But everybody knows that's not true. It'd be easy to show whether the people were dying from AR-15 fire or whether they were dying from handgun fire, wouldn't it? And yet after months of this, I gotta read this in GQ or, you know, on biker websites where they really care. But the rest of the media is just going to let the cops slide on this completely, huh? Another Waco massacre. And just, yeah, you know, whatever. Call whatever you want. But meanwhile, you know, I saw they had a protest at the Capitol the other day. And a guy was basically emphasizing that, like, hey, we're organized. And we vote. Which, yeah, right. Like, that really threatens these guys. But maybe a little bit. You know, basically saying this isn't over. And they are a bunch of, you know, middle-aged white guys. Probably some of them, and maybe older than that, some of them retired. Some of them maybe with some political power. And yet, it sure does seem like their side of the story is going nowhere, doesn't it? Anyway, interesting story. Let's see if I can get the guy on the show about it. Also, Eric Margolies is going to be on the show today to talk about Russia and Syria and all that. And James Bamford is going to be on, I told you yesterday, to talk about this piece in The Intercept about did a rogue NSA operation cause the death of a Greek telecom employee? Good chance to talk to our friend James Bamford again on the show. Oh, I was supposed to write a blog entry about that, wasn't I? Yes, a blog entry. That way, whoever's reading the blog will know that there's a show today. Today's show. Yeah, now, Margulies is in France. I don't know if he's doing journalism there, if he's just hanging out or what, but I'm going to ask him. Sometimes he breaks stories from there, because he has sources inside French intelligence and the military, has in the past. So, yeah, there's that. Join up the chat room at scotthorton.org/chat. And you can join it. It's also an IRC free node chat room. I don't really know what that means, honestly. I mean, somebody told me once that IRC is like HTTP, only it's different. Okay, well, all right. What's free node then? Nobody knows. I don't know. But I know that it's an IRC free node chat room and that it's hashtag Scott Horton Show. So if you use Chatzilla or XChat or what do you call it? Pigeon. Whatever the hell. Then yeah, it's hashtag Scott Horton Show. And then you can join up the chat room. Got a full room today. Hey, everybody. How's things, man? Good to see you. Thanks for tuning in. I assume you're listening if you're hanging out in the chat room. So thanks for tuning in. All right. Yeah, I'm stalling for time. Yes, this show is not well produced. It's just me. All right. Yeah, and then plus, I got to talk about the pigs, other things that the pigs did. I got to talk about Israel-Palestine. I got to talk about the Saudis and the Syrians and the Yemen. Oh, I'm trying to get this lady that wrote this thing for Counterpunch about Yemen. By the way, I am happily taking suggestions for good interviews on the Yemen war. Particularly, you know, any coverage of America's role in it. I tried to get those folk from the LA Times on about when they were sending the more military guys over there to help them spot targets and all that. But, were they CIA that they were sending? I forget. But anyway, I could never get them to do it. But, anyway. Yeah, there's a real lack of coverage of Yemen. It's, not quite the level of crime that the war on Yemen is, but still, it's a crime, man. It's unreal. The way the American media can just ignore the war in Yemen and ignore that it's America's war. It's just crazy. So, wait a minute. What was that I just deleted? It looked like spam, but it wasn't. It looked like spam, but it was from the Air Wars team, which means Chris Woods, British and French airstrikes. Oh, a new study of the British and French's war against the Islamic State in Iraq. That's interesting. So, maybe get to that tomorrow. What the? All right. as long as I'm out of time for this segment, I'll just tell you this. I'm giving a speech on October the 10th. Angela Keaton is going to be there. Jacob Hornberger, Ted Carpenter, and little old me. And I'm going to be giving a speech along the lines of against the terror war. End the terror war. We don't need no stinking terror war. Dumb, stupid terror war that I hate. That's what the speech is going to be about. So if you want to hear a speech like that, go to Fort Worth, Texas on October the 10th. It's a Saturday. It's free. It's at Texas Christian University. It's held by the Texas Millennial Institute, and you can read all about it at texasmillennialinstitute.org. Right back after this. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here for MPV Engineering. This isn't for all of you, but for high-end contractors specializing in industrial construction and end users who own and operate industrial equipment. MPV offers licensed professional consulting on chemical and mechanical engineering for your projects. Tanks, pressure vessels, piping, heat exchangers, HVAC equipment, chemical reactors for oil companies or manufacturing facilities, as well as project management support and troubleshooting for those implementing designs. MPV will get your industrial project up and running. Head over to mpvengineering.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org or thewarstate.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Oh, so much to cover on the show and so little time to get it all. How do I cover it all? I don't know. You know, I want to talk about only Syria, but we got Margulies, the brilliant genius who knows everything about it, coming up in a second. And I keep missing this story. I have it here, but I just keep not getting to it. And I owe it to you to tell you about this in case you don't know it. This version of the tale is told at boingboing.net, which is mostly tech news, I guess, but maybe they're expanding out. Boingboing.net. Jailers watched as man arrested for unpaid traffic fine dies naked on cell floor. David Stojavisky, 32, sentenced to 30 days in Michigan's Macomb County Jail for failing to pay a traffic fine. He was addicted to drugs, but the jail refused to treat him. Reason Magazine reports that over the, quote, next 17 days of his incarceration in a brightly lit cell, where he was denied clothing, he lost 50 pounds. 50 pounds. This is not a giant overweight guy who could stand to lose 50 pounds. It's a normal size, you know, I don't know, I'm looking at the picture of him, I guess, from early on in the thing. You know, maybe 200-pound man. He lost 50 pounds, suffered convulsions, and eventually began to hallucinate. He died in agony from a combination of obvious untreated drug withdrawal and galling neglect, end quote. That's from Reason. Jailers were able to see him on a security monitor the entire time. They simply allowed him to suffer and die. His parents are suing the county. A lawyer for Macomb County says the suit lacks legal merit, and they have no plans to settle. Which is probably true, because they have sovereign immunity, and they can do whatever they like with us. Guess what? They could murder you, too, and get away with that, too. And guess what else? They know it. They know that no matter what they do to you, no matter what they do to your mom, no matter what they do to your little sister, they will never, ever, ever, ever be held accountable. You know why? Because they're the government. That's it. They've got sovereign immunity. They're not your public servants. That's just public relations. They are your lords, your masters. And I know that you're thinking, but Scott, the idiots running the county jail? The lowest scum of the earth? Probably if you combine them all, their IQ is 110. These are my lords and masters. Yep, that's right. You have no rights that they are bound to respect. Do you understand? And you know, I'm all about the Black Lives Matter movement. I support it completely, and I'm huge fans of them. But I sort of wish that they would realize that as bad as racism is, and as much as that has a lot to do with what's going on here and whatever, whatever, if you want to save black people from getting murdered by the cops, there is a more direct route than healing hatred in society so that someday the cops become nicer. How about let's even have a public argument about the fact that there is no accountability for the cops, and they know it, and that's why they murder people, because they know they can. Let's admit that that is the fact, and then let's fix that. How about some checks and balances? How about the DA's office and the police department being a little bit sort of kind of separate isn't quite enough of a check and a balance on the authority of the police to murder anyone they feel like? Maybe we need to find, you know, if we can't, you know, abolish the state and have anarcho-capitalism, you know, with real accountability in the marketplace, then maybe at least we could figure out a way to bring in a DA from the other side of the state to do the investigation. Maybe we could repeal the laws that say that when government agents commit crimes, that they cannot be held liable or responsible for their crimes. Or what is this? Russia? China? Kazakhstan? Some godforsaken third world hellhole? Old world hellhole? Where the rulers are the rulers and everyone else is ruled? Or is this America, where men are born free and allow the government to exist only to protect our rights, like in the deal? And how did 300 million Americans put up with this? Think if Vladimir Putin's government did this to somebody, what they would say. Vladimir Putin, where they'll murder you for not paying your traffic tickets. Russia's fascist dictatorship under their czar, Putinsky. We should go to war with them to liberate those people. We should hire the National Endowment for Democracy to do a color-coded revolution. But this is America. And, just like in the story, there's no accountability here. The lawyer, they're not even hiring outside lawyers. They got their own in-house lawyers. Like, this is nothing. We can murder people in jail if we want. Are you saying we don't have the right to starve somebody to death if that's what we feel like doing? Don't you see my name tag? It says, I'm an employee of the county. And that means I can murder you or your mom or your little sister or whoever I want, and I'll get away with it because I got sovereign immunity. You know, like a Saudi prince. Because I'm your local county level bureaucrat in the great state of Michigan. In America. Well, the homeland. And look, I know it's always been this way. It's not like America used to be free and now it's not. It's just that, hey, this sucks. They murdered this guy. They're getting away with it. Don't you hate that? That's the only reason I'm here, folks, really. To try to create that critical mass of people who hate that. As soon as enough of us hate it, then they'll have to stop. That's it. It's just a matter of numbers. There's 300 million of us, and apparently about 300 million of you love the state, no matter who they murder, no matter how many times they lie right to your face, no matter how much they take right out of your check, you worship them. And I don't know why, but I'm just trying to explain that they're your enemy, and they hate you, and you should hate them back. Like, for example, this guy David Stojewski was sentenced to 30 days for not paying a reckless driving ticket, and they starved him to death in the local county lockup in Macomb County, Michigan. See what I mean? Hey, all Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, kids, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. I'm drinking lemonade, doing a radio show. I got Eric Margolyes on the line. He's covered 14 wars. He speaks, I don't know how many languages. How many languages do you speak, Eric?
I speak pidgin English and a smattering of tribal dialects, such as don't shoot, I'm a journalist.
Yeah. All right, well, and he's very modest. He's the author of American Raj, Liberation or Domination, and War at the Top of the World before that. And so here's a country he knows all about, Syria. And here's a country I've been interviewing him about for many years. He's been writing about for many years. I do hope you guys will all go and check out his article archive at ericmargolyes.com. Spell it like Margolis. ericmargolyes.com. And someone complained about me saying that all the time, but you know what? There are other ways to spell Margolyes, like Joseph Margolyes, the lawyer. He spells it entirely different. So spell it like Margolis, and
thank
you'll
you,
find
Scott.
It. Eric Margolyes. And I said it wrong for the first 4 years I knew you or something, so I'm trying to make up for that. And LouRockwell.com, he also writes there. You can check him out. Almost every article, I think, is published at LouRockwell.com as well. Okay, so, Eric, let's talk about Russian intervention in Syria now. I'll just let you take it and tell us what you think is most important to understand what's going on right now.
Scott, it was inevitable, perfectly predictable, the result of stupid blundering by Washington. I hate to use such strong language. It scares me greatly. It is clearly a step towards a possible war. If you wonder, I was just at Verdun in France, and where a million people died, and you wonder how wars begin. This is a perfect and lugubrious example.
All right, now, so the one thing that I wonder, I think maybe even regular CNN, viewers are beginning to catch on to here is the cognitive dissonance and the way that the American government and Barbara Starr and the rest of them tell the story that, well, of course, we're happy to see Russia bomb ISIS. I mean, that's perfectly great, but we just don't want to see him bomb Assad's enemies. But Assad's enemies, yeah, that's ISIS. As Putin said to Charlie Rose, hey, it's ISIS and Al-Qaeda control 60% of the country. So that's who the opposition is, groups that your government, the UN, and everybody else calls terrorist groups. It's pretty obvious. Again, I'm not, I never was and never would call for actually having America join on the side of Assad. But it's pretty obvious, or I guess it's pretty ridiculous that they continue to try to insist that I'm supposed to be terrified and upset at Russia for doing the same thing that my government ostensibly is doing too, which is bombing the bin Ladenites over there. Supposedly I'm supposed to be really mad, but they won't explain why.
Quite right, Scott. I've been watching the news broadcast. I just got in from Kazakhstan, so I was a bit out of the loop, but now I'm up to date. And we're getting sheer propaganda out of the British, French, and U.S. stations. We're not accurately informed about this ridiculous war that's been going on now for almost 5 years. Has caused 9.4 million refugees, almost 250,000 dead, and destroyed the once beautiful country of Syria, which I've been covering for almost 40 years. So it's terrible. It's a train wreck happening, and nobody in Washington can seem to stop it. All they can do is blame the awful Mr. Putin.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so it makes sense how politically they can't align outright with Russia and Iran and Hezbollah and Syria against the Islamic State and al-Nusra. So, you know, maybe it's just a blessing in disguise and they can really take this cover and say, all right, fine, let Putin fight it then. And maybe this time America doesn't have to work with the Saudis to finance the Mujahideen against them, you know?
Well, the U.S. Air Force is busy right now bombing Syria. It's bombing in Afghanistan now that the Taliban has routed the Afghan puppet army. They're assisting the Saudis bombing Yemen. It's a very stressful situation. But the problem is that we have violence, but we don't have thought or strategy behind it. And Washington is clearly in a trap of its own making in Syria, should never have gotten in there. Vladimir Putin tried to give the U.S. an exit strategy a few years ago when it was this great hue and cry over non-existent poison gas. Now the U.S. is getting deeper and deeper, and I think any moment now we're going to get reports that the U.S. and Russian aircraft have clashed over Syria. It's scary.
Well, okay, see, this is my problem, man. I always do this. I saw that Georgia executed some lady, and I thought, well, she must have done something. But no, then I click on it. No, it was her husband who did something. She was just there. Dope! Same thing here. I think, well, come on. I mean, they must be talking on the red phone and saying, hey, as long as your MiGs are flying near our F-18s, let's at least, you know, trade transponder frequencies and stuff and make sure that we don't end up, you know, in a air war over Syria when we're at least sort of kind of on the same side in a way. But then, no, I'm just making stupid assumptions about how it ought to work. But you're telling me that, no, really, we could just as easy have a dogfight over Syria just because of Russians and Americans flying around and their political bosses not talking about it and coordinating it at the higher levels.
That's right. There have been some attempts to set up a coordination system, but Syria is a huge mess. Nobody knows who's who in Syria. Everybody's fighting everybody else. At the speeds of modern jet fighters, you could be out of Syria in 3 minutes or into another country. The Israelis are getting involved. Iran is massing troops. It's a very complicated situation. But let me add that you mentioned the Islamic State before. And the Islamic State, in my view, is a pipsqueak force. It's just a bunch of wild men running around in pickup trucks that have very little military or offensive value. They're an excuse being used by everybody to bomb them and attack them. Well, you have the Americans, the French, the Canadians, British, and now the Russians. You have five different air forces, and the Saudis six, and maybe the Gulf states too, seven different air forces, all bombing a few people in huts and pickup trucks. It's a crazy situation. You couldn't dream this up.
Yeah. Well, and I'm kind of interested in what's the motivation there. I mean, it reminds me when I was a kid and I just heard tell from, I guess, dads in the neighborhood that, most of the Vietnam War was fought just to empty and replenish and re-empty and replenish those bomb inventories and just keep the whole thing going. And that's kind of just, that's the war economy we live with. And that's sort of what this seems like too, is it's a good training exercise for our fighter jocks. It's a good way to, you know, put welfare in Lockheed pockets and that kind of thing. But regardless of whether, you know, the Islamic State has 50,000 men or 100,000 men or more than that, or whatever armor that America left behind that they've inherited now and that kind of thing from the last Iraq war and all that, you still can't win a war with air power. I mean, even with Johnson and Nixon just straight carpet bombing North Vietnam, that didn't win the war, and they can't do that level of carpet bombing now for political correctness reasons, right? They can't just level Mosul with B-52s like that. So they couldn't possibly achieve anything with all this bombing other than, you know, kill some people. But, I mean, even the Rand Corporation study says, oh, yeah, killing people from the air isn't doing any good. Anybody could have told you that. And I'm sorry, now the music's playing, but I'll let you respond to that on the other side of this break.
Okay.
You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey, I'll check out the audiobook of Lou Rockwell's Fascism Versus Capitalism, narrated by me, Scott Horton, at audible.com. It's a great collection of his essays and speeches on the important tradition of liberty. From medieval history to the Ron Paul Revolution, Rockwell blasts our status enemies, profiles our greatest libertarian heroes, and prescribes the path forward in the battle against Leviathan. Fascism Versus Capitalism by Lou Rockwell for audiobook. Find it at Audible, Amazon, iTunes, or just click in the right margin of my website at scotthorton.org. Hey, I'm Scott. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. I got Eric Margulies on the line. We're talking about the ongoing tragedy in Syria. And, you know, we talked about this back 4 years ago when all this was starting about, I guess it was Patrick Coburn's words, that, man, we could be looking at a Lebanon-style 15-year civil war here or worse. This could just go on and on. The same kind of level of devastation that we saw when George W. Bush destroyed Iraqi civilization. I mean, hell, we hear about 9 million refugees. How many million of those, probably at least a million of them, are Iraqis hiding out in Syria? Now they're kicked out of Syria. Can't go back to Iraq. Got nowhere to go. Whole damn region turned upside down by American foreign policy here. Anyway, so where we left off, you were saying, you consider these the Islamic State to be a very ragtag force here, even at the highest estimates. I think, you know, Patrick Coburn gives them a lot of credibility as actually making a state and having a couple hundred thousand fighters. They've got conscription in three major cities and a system of taxation, this and that. Except whatever revenue they have is basically just from black market oil sales to Turkey, which is in the millions of dollars. It's nothing. And of course, none of the oil resources in that part of Iraq are developed. The Baiji refinery is completely offline indefinitely. And I guess they're able to pull some oil out of the ground in Syria, but, they're not able to do much with it except home level refinement, right? Garage level refineries going on. So, they certainly are hemmed in, and yet air war can only accomplish what other than, you know, basically providing airstrikes to protect infantry on the ground. What are they good for? It seems like they could go on bombing the Islamic State from the air like this indefinitely and wouldn't lead to any change on the ground in terms of who rules Mosul, Fallujah, and Ramadi.
Well, unless they kill the leadership, it's known as decapitation in the U.S. military. But look, I've covered a lot of wars. I've been a soldier myself. I look at this whole ISIS business, and two things strike me. First of all, it's been ludicrously exaggerated. It's a ragtag bunch of lightly armed, crazy people, thugs, with stiffened by some of Saddam's old soldiers. Secondly, I really believe that ISIS, or Islamic State, was created by the Saudis and is a secret tacit ally of both the Saudis and the U.S. So what's been going on for the last couple of years, we're pretending to fight. We're the greatest power on earth, and we cannot knock out a bunch of teenagers with burp guns. We've staged battles with them, which is more theater than actual combat. We don't want them to lose because they're fighting President Assad's government, which we want to overthrow. And it's a crazy situation. It is a big charade.
Hmm. All right, well, so there's a couple things there. I guess the second thing first, as far as, you know, doing something about them now, wouldn't it take an invasion, a ground invasion of Mosul? You couldn't just, or the complete carpet bombing of Mosul to drive these guys out of Mosul at this point? I mean, I understand that America is powerful enough, but it would take putting the Marines on the ground and doing Fallujah 4 again kind of thing, right? Or not?
Oh, I don't think so. The Jordanian army could clear up Mosul in a couple of days. So could the Turkish police. Never mind. Mighty Turkish army, 500,000 tough soldiers. No, but we don't want to clear them up because they're helpful to us. And I think we're trying to get the Islamic State to go and fight Taliban in Afghanistan as well. They are a covert Western asset. Otherwise, they would have knocked them out long ago.
All right. Well, I mean, but by then that. By that you mean they would have hired the Turks to go in there and get them?
Or they would have? Yes. Yes, definitely. They're not much to them, but they're useful. And they are part of our whole policy in Syria to overthrow the government using different groups. We're funding all these groups, mm-hmm. by the way.
Well, let me ask you this. I want to narrow down this point a little bit because... it's obvious. There's no doubt about it. Hell, as we've been discussing on this show for 4 years straight, that's part of the advantage of just doing this show and not coming up with a better thing to do with my life. I just keep doing this over and over again. So I can always refer back to the year's worth of coverage to the story, from before the declaration of the Islamic State. Hell, Obama told Jeffrey Goldberg, that's right, Jeffrey Goldberg, getting rid of Assad would be a great way to take Iran down a peg. And of course, what they all mean by that is, after George Bush accidentally handed, two-thirds of Iraq over to Iranian-backed Shia forces who kicked us right out because they don't need us. And after that blunder, then, yeah, gee, now we really need to check Iranian power. So let's peel off Assad from them. And of course, there's the 2012 DIA memo where they say, hey, there's a real risk of the creation of an Islamic State here, and that seems to be what the allies want. I don't know exactly in that paragraph whether they're referring to the U.S., but they're certainly referring to Turkey, Qatar, and Saudi, and saying that's what they want is an Islamic emirate there. Now, I don't know if that's exactly the same in that document, at least, as saying they want the Islamic State, the one they got with Baghdadi. I mean, are you saying you think Baghdadi just outright works for Saudi intelligence, or this is the natural result of what they're doing? And even after the declaration of the caliphate, they still don't give a damn and they're still willing to support them anyway? Or how do you clarify that?
The Islamic State doesn't work directly, but they are allies for them. Going back to Vietnam, which you mentioned, I remember very vividly. And by the way, in Vietnam, Scott, it wasn't just to make arms that we were in that war. We were scared, really scared, that China and the Soviet Union together were about to take over Southeast Asia. Even I believed that at the time. It was wrong. But anyway, back to the front. The Islamic State is too useful. It's a great boogeyman to scare these people. And the Saudis have learned to use such groups like this for years to advance their own goals.
Yeah. All right. So, it sure seems like it. Although, how easy is it? How easy would it be for Obama to tell Erdogan, all right, that's enough. I want you to send your cops in there to arrest these guys, or send your army in there to beat them in 1 weekend? Would Erdogan just jump if Obama said jump, or he has his own plans and America can go to hell, or there's just no doubt that Obama and the entire national security state are down with the Saudi-Turkish policy here 100%?
No, the Turks are too clever and wily to act as regional policemen for the U.S., and Erdogan is too smart to get involved up to his ears in the Syrian mess and the Iraqi mess, which are getting bigger and bigger. The U.S. cannot understand this whole situation. It's way beyond us, and these nitwits in Congress who are trying to make policy for an area they can't find on a map. So the best thing that we can do is get the hell out of the Middle East, let it go its own way, rather than trying to micromanage an area of impossible complexity.
All right. So what do you think is, and let's assume, well, with or without American intervention here, what do you think Putin's plan is here? He's just going to bolster the Syrian army and Hezbollah as much as he can and just start marching east, or what?
No, I think Putin is very, very clever and very stern. What he's done initially up to now, he's been calling for diplomatic settlements that will be somewhat to Russia's advantage, or at least to stabilize the situation, head off a war. He's been doing this over Ukraine. Washington won't listen. He's now again called for a diplomatic solution to Syria that will leave President Assad there in power, perhaps, perhaps not. But certainly the Russians are being very cautious, as they always are, and they don't want to have a direct clash with the United States, even though they are suffering very heavy provocations. Let's hope that Mr. Putin's nerves hold out and that he keeps cool, calm, and collected.
I read a funny thing by Michael Scheuer. He said, as our enemies would say, God is great for giving us this opportunity to get the hell out of there and just leave it all on Russia. If they got to give them their own Vietnam again or whatever, it's better than giving ourselves another one again. But anyway, let me ask you this. What are you doing in Kazakhstan? What's going on in Kazakhstan?
I was invited to consult with some senior officials in Kazakhstan. And it was an interesting opportunity. It's a long way away, but I was out there. I was in the mountains. I was in the deserts of Kazakhstan. I was in the capital, Astana, and Almaty. It's a very interesting country, and very charming people. I'd only briefly been to Kazakhstan before. I know the other stands quite well. Now I have a good feel for Kazakhstan, too. It's an important country.
That's funny. Right before I brought you on, I was ranting about the cops, and I was saying, what the hell is this, Kazakhstan? Because I was trying to picture, you know, like some very, very old world nation, very far from here, where, you know, John Locke never tread or whatever. And that was the one I picked. And then as soon as I brought you on the air, you're saying, oh, I just got back from Kazakhstan. And I thought, wow, what a coincidence of all the countries I picked off the top of my head.
And next time, better use Uzbekistan.
Uzbekistan, duly noted, yeah.
Yeah, where the fun-loving leaders who are U.S. allies like to boil their political opponents alive.
Oh, man, yeah. Forgive me, I had spaced that one out. What is it, Nakayev? Is that how you say it?
No, Islam Karimov.
Karimov.
The Kazakh leader is Nursultan Nazarbayev, who I've been following since the 1980s when I was covering Moscow. And he was certainly the smartest of the Central Asian leaders, a very close ally of Gorbachev. And people thought for a while that he might become the next leader of what was the Soviet Union. He would have made a very good leader.
Very interesting. I hope you do write about your trip there, if not your meeting there, which doesn't sound like article material, but.
Soon as I get over my jet lag, Scott.
All right. Well, welcome back to the West. Good to talk to you again, as always, Eric.
Cheerio.
See ya. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new ebook by longtime Future Freedom author Scott McPherson, Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. This is the definitive principled case in favor of gun rights and against gun control. America is exceptional. Here the people come first, and we refuse to allow the state a monopoly on firearms. Our liberty depends on it. Get Scott McPherson's Freedom and Security, the Second Amendment and the Right to Keep and Bear Arms on Kindle at Amazon.com today. Hey, y'all, guess what? You can now order transcripts of any interview I've done for the incredibly reasonable price of $2.50 each. Listen, finding a good transcriptionist is near impossible, but I've got one now. Just go to scotthorton.org/transcripts, enter the name and date of the interview you want written up, click the PayPal button, and I'll have it in your email in 72 hours max. You don't need a PayPal account to do this. Man, I'm really going to have to learn how to talk more good. That's scotthorton.org/transcripts. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. scotthorton.org for the archives. Almost 4,000 interviews now, going back to 2003. ScottHorton.org. Follow me on Twitter at Scott Horton Show. Okay, next up on the show today is our old friend Jim Bamford. Now, here's the thing about Jim. He wrote The Puzzle Palace, Body of Secrets, and the Shadow Factory, all about the National Security Agency, and of course also wrote the absolutely indispensable A Pretext for War, 9/11, Iraq, and the Abuse of America's Intelligence Agencies, which I hope you'll read. And there's a bunch of great journalism by him at Rolling Stone and all over the place, too, if you search around. Welcome back to the show, Jim. How are you?
Great, Scott. Thanks for having me back.
Very good to have you back on the show here. And good to read you in The Intercept, the Glenn Greenwald joint over there, theintercept.com. Well, I thought it was First Look / The Intercept. I guess not. Theintercept.com it is now. A death in Athens. Did a rogue NSA operation cause the death of a Greek telecom employee? And so that's my first question for you. Did it, in fact?
Well, according to the Greek government, which did a lot of investigation of it, they said there was definitely a connection between his death, the death of the Greek telecom engineer, and the NSA's secret bugging operation.
Okay.
The bugging operation was discovered basically the day before he was found hanged in his apartment. So, yeah, there's definitely a connection. The question, however, is how did he die and what was the cause?
Right. Okay, so I think I'll follow your lead in the article. You put off the question of whether it was really a suicide or a murder to later on in the article. You go ahead and start with who this guy was and what was he doing working at this telecom, and then get into the Olympics of 2004 and the entry of the Americans into his story. So go ahead and tell us, and I'll let you pronounce his name so I don't ruin it here. Kostas.
Well, it's a really fascinating story. This has been a mystery that's really involved Greece in an enormous scandal for a decade now. 10 years ago was the Greek Olympics, the Summer Olympics. And the Olympics went on, and everybody was happy. And then 6 months later, or rather about 4 months later, it was discovered that there was a massive bugging operation going on, including targeting the top officials of the Greek government, the prime minister, his wife, the mayor of Athens, over 100 people. So the question was, who did this bugging, and when did it start, and why was it done? And again, this was a scandal that was of the Watergate variety in Greece. It's probably the biggest scandal that's hit the country in a generation. So for years, nobody had any idea who did this or why it was done. They just found this massive piece of malware on the major communications company there, which was called Vodafone. And incidentally, the day after all this was discovered, one of the engineers that worked there was found hanged in his apartment. Was ruled originally as a suicide. So there was a definite mystery as to whether he was involved and who did this and why. And that's pretty much been going on for years. And then I did this story for The Intercept. I spent a few months on it working with a Greek reporter for one of the major Greek newspapers over there. And so we've really gotten a number of answers. And that was largely as a result of finding a number of documents that had never been disclosed before in the Snowden archive, and also getting exclusive interviews with some really high CIA sources who worked in Athens at the time and also were involved in the operation. So what it came down to, basically, is that the U.S. had gotten permission from the Greek government to install malware into the Vodafone mobile phone system just prior to the Olympics, and to look for a possibility of terrorists during the Olympics, which was fine with the Greek government because they didn't have very much of a capability for doing eavesdropping, especially on widespread basis, looking for terrorism and so forth. So the agreement was you'd come in here, you could put your bugs into the system here, listen for any potential threats involving terrorism during the Olympics. And then once the Olympics are over, you pull the bugs, you take them out, and go on your merry way. Well, after the Olympics, the U.S., the NSA turned off its bugs, and then it secretly turned them back on about a week later. And instead of searching for terrorists, they turned them on and began targeting the top leadership of the Greek government, obviously very secretly. And in order to do that, it required a lot of effort. You needed to find a way to manipulate the system to get it to perform this eavesdropping capability, and they did that by manipulating a system within the telecom network called Lawful Intercept. It's too long to get into in this interview, but I'll just say that they found a way to bug a lot of phones using the telecom system. Well, one of the key things that the NSA does when it does these overseas interceptions, so these massive interceptions in foreign countries, is to recruit a local telecom employee, to get a local telecom employee to actually plant the bugs in the system, because they're in there and they're able to get access to it. So that was one of the ideas, was that maybe Costas, the person who ended up allegedly committing suicide after this was all over, maybe he was the one who actually planted it, or he could have been the one who discovered it and tried to report it. Mm-hmm. So what you have is you have the NSA bugging the system that was discovered after the Olympics, and nobody knew who did it, and that was the basis of the article, to show that the U.S. was behind it and how the U.S. Mm-hmm. planted it, and the terrible repercussions that came out afterwards, the huge scandal, person dying, and so forth.
Well, so why did they need somebody to install it, though, you know, like a rogue employee recruited off the clock here or something like that, when, as you said, the Greek government said, fine, go ahead and tap it. The only scandal was that they didn't remove it, but... So how does that process work, where they just pretend to remove it, or they really did remove it and they needed to recruit somebody to go and put it back on there, or I'm lost?
Yeah, I mean, the Greek government gave them permission, but it wasn't like they put an advertisement in the newspaper. The whole thing was extremely secret.
So even when it was authorized by the Greek government in the first place, they still needed to get a rogue employee secret. It wasn't like a government order to the bosses of the company. They had to just recruit a tech guy and have him insert a thumb drive or something. Is that right?
That's right, because, as I said, the Greek government didn't have a capability to do this. The Greek government couldn't call up Vodafone and say, oh, hey, you know.
No, but I mean, they could order them to go along with the NSA, right, the bosses of the company, or it was just too secret for that. So the plan is just...
what nobody knows at this point. That's what the still part of the mystery is. Who within the government, I mean, who within the company knew about it? Now, the key thing is you have to get somebody in the company at that point, because they had to install this piece of malware.
Right. All right. Now, hold it right there, Jim. We got to take this break. We'll be right back, everybody, with more from Jim Bamford on his great new article, In the Intercept, Did a Rogue NSA Operation Cause the Death of a Greek Telecom Employee? And when we get back, we'll find out about this employee and his death. Oh, and read The Shadow Factory. It's really good. Hey, Al Scott here. On average, how much do you think these interviews are worth to you? Of course, I've never charged for my archives in a dozen years of doing this, and I'm not about to start. But at patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow, you can name your own price to help support and make sure there's still new interviews to give away. So what do you think? 2 bits? A buck and a half? There are usually about 80 interviews per month, I guess, so take that into account. You can also cap the amount you'd be willing to spend in case things get out of hand around here. That's patreon.com/ScottWhartonShow. And thanks, y'all. Hey, y'all, Scott here for Samurai Tech Academy at MasterSamuraiTech.com. Modern appliance repair requires true technicians who can troubleshoot their high-tech electronics. If you're young and looking to make some real money, or you've been at it a while and just need to keep your skills up to date, Samurai Tech Academy teaches it all. And they'll also show you the business, how to own and run your own. Take a free sample course to see how easily you can learn appliance repair from MasterSamuraiTech.com. Use coupon code Scott Horton for 10% off any course or set of courses at MasterSamuraiTech.com. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. Lucky you and me, we got James Bamford on the line. So glad to know that, you're working with Greenwald and them at The Intercept and that you have access to that Snowden archive. Because as soon as I wondered, who's giving Greenwald this stuff? I wonder if they're giving it to Bamford too. And so now I'm very happy to know that, you've got access, for reporting your stories here. At The Intercept, did a rogue NSA operation cause the death of a Greek telecom employee? Answer, apparently yes. Whether it was murder, suicide, don't know yet. I'm about to ask Jim. But first, can you just tell us about this guy? It's, Kostas, you say his last name.
It's pronounced, in Greek, I think it's pronounced, Tesalakidias. And he was it's Kostas Tesalakidias, and he was a very experienced engineer. He was one of the most experienced engineers within the Greek telecom company, Vodafone. And he was involved one way or another, which was what was determined by the Greek government. He was involved either as the person who planted the malware on behalf of the NSA, or else the person who discovered it, and tried to report it. So one way or the other, he was involved, and that's the key question. What caused him to either commit suicide or, as two medical examiners, including a former medical examiner from, the San Francisco, medical examiner's office, said that, the indications are that it's not suicide. So it's a very big mystery, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the article and sort of bring these things out. Mm. And as the article says, it was a rogue operation, which, again, is a really interesting fact here. Rogue operation meant that
Hold that one second, because I want to talk about the dead victim here for a second longer before we get, because that's all very important. I want to give you plenty of time to elaborate on it. But I think it's important to note, as you're saying, there's reason to indicate, there's expert reason to indicate that maybe he was murdered. But I think it's important to emphasize that at least if it was a suicide, the probable cause of that would be the American, and this is just some guy, right? This is not a national government level cop in Greece. This is just some tech expert, a civilian, a normal human being with a normal job who got put into this position by American intelligence, where it turned out he had betrayed his country and to an incredible degree, which he surely didn't know that they were going to be tapping, you know, the highest levels of leadership or whatever. He wouldn't have been told that. But if it was a suicide, it was because they used him up and threw his worthless life away when they were done with it. And then that's the gentle explanation. The worst explanation is they murdered him before he could talk.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think that's why this is a very important story, because, as you mentioned, one of the likely scenarios here is that he's working happily at his job. He's working hard because the Olympics are coming and they have to develop all this new these new systems to help the journalists and so forth when they come to work on the Olympics. And then all of a sudden, somebody whispers in his ear that the government has allowed the NSA to plant a massive bug in the system, and he's the one with administrator access and knows the system, and he's the one that can do this, and would he help doing it? It's a very patriotic thing. We're trying to catch terrorists. So he goes ahead and does it, and nobody tells him that it's supposed to end at the end of the Olympics, and nobody tells them after the Olympics is over that they've switched, that they're secretly doing it now, the NSA secretly doing it now, And they switched from looking for terrorists to eavesdropping on his own government, the top leaders of his own government. And then he finds that out after the bug is discovered. So here's a person who is a very loyal, patriotic Greek citizen who suddenly discovers that he's the guy responsible for bugging the senior members of government, the enormous Watergate-style scandal, and he's at the center of it. And there was a lot of shouting that went on. He threatened to quit. He sent his girlfriend a text message saying, I have to get out of here. It's a matter of life and death and all that. And then the day after it's exposed, he commits suicide. So, you know, it could be a number of scenarios. He could have been the one that planted it, like I said, and then felt guilty because he was used and, as you said, thrown away. Or he could have discovered it and said, I'm going to report this before it was actually made public. And somebody said, no, you're not. It'll be a huge scandal. We'll all be involved. And so that's the question. I have no medical knowledge. All I'm doing is saying basically what these coroners said. And one of them was the former coroner, former medical examiner for San Francisco. Another was a professor at the medical school in Athens, a professor of forensic medicine. So you have
in your article, you're reporting two different experts who are disputing the original conclusion of suicide because of the marks on his neck.
That's right. Yeah. And again, I'm just taking what they said, and they don't have any reason to make it up or anything. But again, that's one small area of the article.
I understand.
The other aspects of the article deals with.
I just want to make sure it didn't sound to the audience like you're out on a limb or something. All you're saying, all you're doing is repeating facts, which is what these experts told you. You're basically quoting them. You're not drawing conclusions. And yeah, I don't mean to say that's the heart of the article, but he is the victim. And so
right.
It is
and
important.
That's why I said a death in Athens. That's the key.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Here, because everybody talks about NSA operations as if, you know, it's just, signals going from here to there. There's human beings involved. And this is, you know, really the first example of how these systems can actually cause enormous harm to human beings. And this is a person who died.
Yeah.
So that's one of the reasons why this is such a important story, I think, because it takes away this whole theory that, oh, these are just technical operations that don't involve any human beings. Well, tell that to Costas' family. I think that's one of the main factors that has to come out of this article.
Yeah.
Of course, the other aspect.
Well, actually, let me ask you, is there any way you could stay one more segment? I mean, I could keep recording you into the break here, but I'd rather keep you another segment if you have the time. One more?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay.
Okay, great. Hang tight through this break, and then we'll be right back, y'all, with James Bamford, this very important article. Did a rogue NSA operation cause the death of a Greek telecom employee? And we're going to find out about the NSA sneaking around behind the CIA's back? Question? All right. Hang on a minute. Hey, y'all. Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place. It features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code SCOTT when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Jim Bamford, the author of The Shadow Factory. In this article at TheIntercept.com, did a rogue NSA operation cause the death of a Greek telecom employee? answer yes, one way or the other. Yes, it did. And now, the question, Jim, is about, the operation, which, I think you're portraying as itself illegal under Greek and maybe even under American law, the way this thing worked. But I know that I know the answer is no to the question I asked before the break, about who was going behind who's back there, but I'll let you explain. Go ahead, please.
Well, normally in foreign countries, when an intelligence operation is conducted either by NSA, CIA, the DIA, or any other of the intelligence agencies, the person who is responsible and basically in charge is the CIA chief of station. He's sort of the manager of all intelligence operations in a country. So the CIA chief of station is responsible largely to the ambassador for any intelligence operations that are conducted. So if the NSA, for example, wants to do a particular bugging in a country, perform an eavesdropping operation, it would normally get the approval of the CIA chief of station. And if it's serious enough, then it also needs the approval of the ambassador. Well, what happened in this case, which was extremely unusual because the number of former CIA officials who I talked to said this hardly ever happens. Most of them said they'd never heard of it happening before. But in this case, the NSA went behind the CIA chief of station's back. In other words, they did the operation without getting any kind of approval from the CIA chief of station or the ambassador. So it was a rogue operation. It was performed without any authority. Now, this is the part where they actually turned the system back on. The original bugging during the Olympics looking for terrorism, that had been approved. What hadn't been approved was turning the system back on and targeting the top leaders of the Greek government, which was a friendly allied government. That was extremely unusual, and that came from a very high-level intelligence source that was involved in the operation, who was telling me that the CIA was extremely surprised when they discovered the NSA had been doing this behind their back.
Wow. And so the CIA and the embassy were both completely cut out, and the NSA was just doing it on their own accord?
It was totally on NSA's accord. They had no permission from either the CIA or the Director of National Intelligence or the ambassador or anybody. They just did it. Later, the CIA, one of the senior CIA people called one of the senior NSA people and asked what's going on, and they just said, oh, we forgot to tell you about this.
Yeah. So, well, they all got in really bad trouble, right?
Well, nobody knew. I mean, again, this is all secret until my article came out. But so nobody knew about it. There was no.
But I mean, internally, it's not like the CIA complained to the NSA bosses and the NSA people involved were reprimanded or anything like that at all, right?
Well, I really don't know. I know the CIA was very angry at the very highest levels that this was done without their permission. What happened at NSA, I don't know. I interviewed the director at the time, the person who was director at the time, General Hayden. All he said was, I can't talk about that. I just can't talk about that. And I interviewed the person who was deputy director, Chris Engel, and he also wouldn't talk about it. But he did say, Engels did say that, anytime the NSA performs an operation overseas, it gets the permission and the oversight of the CIA chief of station. So that was another factor here. You have one factor, a death being caused, another factor, the CIA, the NSA, going behind of their host government and turning this on illegally. And then the third factor is that they did it without even the knowledge or permission of their own government.
And now there have been indictments in Greece, right? And that's of the CIA guys or the NSA guys?
Now, the Greeks, this came as a very big shock to the Greeks when they discovered this massive wiretap. And as you can imagine, if somebody discovered that the president of the United States, the vice president, the president's wife, the mayor of Washington, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, all these people were secretly being bugged by somebody, it'd be an enormous scandal. There were five investigations that took place afterwards. But because the bug was removed, that really was a really difficult aspect during the investigation. Had they left the bug in, they would have been able to trace it to who was actually doing the eavesdropping by finding out where the signals were going and so forth. But because as soon as it was found, it was removed, the people who were behind it were able to turn off their phones and hide the evidence. So it's taken five investigations and 10 years, and they finally narrowed it down by tracing the signals, tracing the cell phones, tracing all these things that took a lot of technological capability. They narrowed it down to the U.S. Embassy, and then within the embassy, they pointed the finger at one of the CIA officials whose sort of digital fingerprints were found on the evidence. The one of the cell phones that was purchased that was used for this bugging. What happens is you bug the system, and the system sends the duplicate phone calls of the prime minister and everybody else out to basically throw away phones that the NSA had bought. Had purchased, and they traced one of those phones to this person at the embassy, a guy named William Basil, and he was one of the CIA officials in the CIA station, the Greek embassy. What makes him extremely interesting, and nobody knew about him really much until I began investigating him, and I found out a great deal about him. He's ethnically Greek. His parents came from a small island, Karpathos, in Greece, and he moved. His father moved to the United States when before he was born, so Basil was born in the United States. But then, when he was 9 years old, he went back with his father and his father's new wife back to Karpathos, and then. He came back to the United States when he was a teenager and joined the Army for 5 years and then became a deputy sheriff in Baltimore County. And then he joined the CIA's security division as a polygraph operator. And he did that for many years, 10 or 15, 20 years or so. And he got tired of it, and he wanted to get into the DO, the Director of Operations, where all the spying is done. And because of his ethnic background, he had obviously fluent in Greece. He fluent in Greek. He knew the culture, knew the people well, and all that. So they accepted him into the DO, the Director of Operations, and they sent him off to Greece as a undercover CIA person masquerading as a State Department employee at the embassy. And his job, and I interviewed one of his colleagues in Greece, one of his CIA colleagues that worked with him very closely, and he said, his job was to recruit sources for the CIA, recruit local Greeks. And he would drive around in an SUV, had a gun strapped to his side. He had another gun on his ankle. He wore a bulletproof vest, and that's what his job was. And the person said he was the best recruiter the embassy had. And so he would have logically been one of the people who would have been used to recruit the inside source at Vodacom, because he's Greek, he spoke Greek, he was ethnically Greek, And he was CIA, and that's what the CIA does. I interviewed the senior CIA official at CIA who was involved in this operation, and he said, yeah, that's the way it works. NSA doesn't really do the recruiting inside. That's the CIA's job. They do the human side of the business. They go in, they recruit.
And so the part that the CIA didn't know was that they had left it on, the NSA had left it on, rather than shutting the thing down after the Olympics were over then.
Yeah, you could imagine that Basil, I mean, he wouldn't, he was just sort of a worker bee. He wouldn't have necessarily known what communication was being decided in Washington, who approved it. He was just being told by whoever to go recruit somebody because we're planning this. I mean, he, you know, likely recruited the person before this all began, when everything was legal. The problem was, nobody told anybody that this was over, the bug should have been removed and so forth. So Basil may not have even known that the bug should have been removed. So, again, this is what I'm trying to do, is bring out this mystery so that the Greek government can start looking deeply into this. There was a huge front-page story, I think 4,000 words, yesterday when my story came out in the front page of the Greek equivalent of the New York Times, and another big story under Spiegel. So Europeans are taking this very seriously. There was another story today in The Guardian.
Great.
On it. So
good work.
This is very serious. This was, yeah, this was a you know, friendly ally that we had that we basically shoved a SID to. We shoved a SID in their back because we went behind their back and started bugging their own top leaders illegally and without even the permission of the ambassador or the chief of station. So it's something that should be looked into. And finally, as you mentioned earlier, the Greeks just last February issued an arrest warrant for Basil. First time it's ever been done, except for one time in Italy it issued arrest warrants for CIA people. But other than that, this is the first time an ally had issued an arrest warrant for a CIA person. And then the investigation, the final investigation after 10 years, was just completed last June, the end of June. So this is just coming to a head now in Greece. Even though it happened 10 years ago, the actual investigation is just coming to a head. And now they have a new prime minister who's, when this happened, it was under a conservative government in Greece, and now it's a more left-wing government in Greece, so there may be an incentive to look back and see what went on.
All right, with that, we got to stop because we're about to be back on again after this break. We're recording through it. But very happy to have you back on the show, Jim. Really appreciate your journalism here and your time today.
Great. Thanks, Doug. Great being on the show. Thanks.
All right, y'all, that is the great James Bamford. He's the author of The Puzzle Palace, Body of Secrets, A Pretext for War, The Shadow Factory, and this article, Did a Rogue NSA Operation Cause the Death of a Greek Telecom Employee? And we're already back again. All right, I'm Scott Horton. It's my radio show. That was Jim Bamford. That must be fun to come back from the commercial and hear me just wrapping up the outro. I know, I do a live radio show, but I'm recording too, and so sometimes I blow the brakes. And it is what it is, man. All right. Haha. I was wondering if someone in the chat room was going to notice the music. Let's see if you guys can figure it out. All right, it's the Scott Horton Show. I got to wrap up for the day here, man. I was going to mention some things for you. Tomorrow, Greg Grandin is going to be here to talk about Henry Kissinger, the devil, and all the hell that he has to pay. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I haven't read the book, but I have read the article. Actually, that's not true. I only read half the article. I got to go back. It's a really long article. Greg Grandin at TomDispatch.com. You can find it under Tom Englehart's name at antiwar.com as well. Greg Grandin on Kissinger. So that'll be a great interview tomorrow. Is anybody going to answer Kit and tell him what song that was? Poor guy. If I was him, I'd be really frustrated right now. Wondering, what is that song? I know that. It's not really a song, is it? It's not really music, is it? It's some guy with a keyboard. Anyway. Man, I wonder if this is really true. Soldiers attack ambulances, kidnap wounded Palestinian. Child, 12 years of age, kidnapped in Hebron. Israeli soldiers attacked Tuesday several Palestinian ambulances while transporting wounded Palestinians to hospitals in Ramallah. Kidnapped one Palestinian after dragging him out of the ambulance and attempted to abduct another. That's at IMEMC, the International Middle East Media Center. I don't know. Maybe or maybe there won't be further confirmation after that. I don't know. I should say, aside from all my sarcastic answers and whatever, I'm not for Russia bombing people. I'm not for anybody warring against anyone. I know I keep saying sarcastic things like, well, let the Russians fight it and let us get the hell out of there. Well, I'd prefer that to America staying in. But no, there shouldn't be any foreign intervention in Syria. And that includes America should call off their Turkish and Saudi dogs as well. But anyway, no, I'm not for a war as long as it's, you know, Russia and Hezbollah against the Islamic State. I'm not for anybody's war against anybody. But I'm number one opposed to American intervention in all these crises. And the thing is with the Syrian the Russian intervention in Syria, as the invited guests of the Syrian government, with an announced intelligence sharing agreement between them, the Russians, the Syrians, the Iranians, and the Iraqis to all work together. When American politics, of course, absolutely forbid America from aligning with Iran and the Shiite Crescent against our Saudi and Saudi backed terrorist allies. Just quit. Why are we backing the Saudis and Saudi-backed terrorists? If it makes no sense to back Iran against bin Ladenites, it sure as hell doesn't make sense to back bin Ladenites against Iran. And, you know, these idiots on CNN and all over Twitter today, you know, the Russians started bombing. And they're hyperventilating that, oh, they're not attacking ISIS. They're attacking the opposition. Well, who do you think the opposition is? For Christ's sake, the opposition to Assad is the Islamic State and the al-Nusra Front. Whatever small groups of CIA supposedly vetted, more like armed and backed, groups are no more than a couple of thousand in the war. If anything, they're just the useful idiots of Omar Baku al-Baghdadi, the caliph. Whatever territory they take from the Assad government quickly gets taken by al-Nusra or the Islamic State themselves as they continue to expand. The American and Saudi and Turkish-backed moderates were all part of the Army of Conquest with the al-Nusra Front, that is Syrian al-Qaeda, when they took Idlib back a couple of months ago, was 6 weeks ago, or eight. And that's not a major city, but it's an important town. And that was the American, the CIA, and Allied-backed Army of Conquest, which is just a nice name for al-Nusra, armed by the West. They're the ones doing the fighting. And Patrick Coburn has said over and over again, he asked the FSA and all these so-called moderates, hey, what do you guys think about jihad and September 11th or whatever? And they say, we like cutting people's heads off and doing suicide attacks. And if we could have been on them planes killing ourselves to bring those towers down, we would have too. Hip, hip, hooray for 9/11, they all say. That's, I guess, Patrick Coburn's litmus test question. Hey, what do you guys think? Remember that 9/11 attack on America? What do you think of that? And they'll go, yeah. They're the moderates. You know, like the Al-Farouk Brigade, whose commander is caught on film eating a dead soldier's heart. Or the Northern Storm Brigade, John McCain's very CIA-vetted moderate rebels. Who admitted to Time magazine that, yeah, they're veterans of Al-Qaeda in Iraq from Iraq War II. They were Zarqawi's men. And now they're back in Syria. And were the same guys who kidnapped a bunch of Lebanese civilian Shiite pilgrims. And the same guys who sold, I don't know if they originally, I think the FSA originally kidnapped him and sold him. One group, yeah, I guess it was the Northern Storm kidnapped him in the first place. I forget. Maybe one other group, maybe it was al-Nusra kidnapped him and gave him to the Northern Storm Brigade, and then the Northern Storm Brigade sold him to ISIS, Stephen Sotloff, the American journalist, and then the ISIS guys cut his head off. Those are John McCain's vetted moderates, sold this guy to ISIS. And all day long they go, oh my God, you know, I saw Barbara Starr, who is basically just a Pentagon spokesman, posing as a CNN journalist. She's just the mouth of Sauron up there. And it's hilarious because you can even see sometimes the anchors get a little bit confused and they know that they're supposed to agree that this all makes sense or something. But, well, America is all for bombing the Islamic State. And they're all happy to see the Russians bomb the Islamic State. But, you know, they're afraid that they're going to also bomb the enemies of Assad and that that could help strengthen Assad. Huh? I mean, I don't know, man. I'm no playwright or whatever, but I'm sure there's got to be a better way to phrase that where it doesn't sound so obviously contradictory. America's flying as Assad's Air Force or as ISIS's Air Force, Barbara? Which is it? We know whose side Russia's on. Anyway. No, it's not Beverly Hills Cop. Good try. See, now you're bummed because it's over and you're just going to have to wait till the next time it plays, which might not even be this week. Poor guy. You'll figure it out, dude. Don't worry about it. Just have patience. Yeah. So, yeah, man. Let me switch to something else. U.S. judge dismisses September 11th victim's case against Saudi Arabia. Saying, well, geez, if you guys don't have the 28 pages, then I guess you can't make your case. Dismissed it. This is the same judge, U.S. District Judge George Daniels in Manhattan, who said that Iran did it. He ruled Iran liable for 9/11. Ha! And dismisses the case against Saudi Arabia when we all know Prince Bandar was and Prince Turki were both at least paying protection money to Al-Qaeda that ended up being used against America. At the very least. But anyway. Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more wars in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.